In today's episode, I'm talking with a familiar face of the show, William. You might know him because he is the moderator of our Discord community server, Master an American Accent. And this time, he shares his experience with speaking English while feeling sick, and all the complications that come along with that. He especially emphasizes the physical difficulties of pronunciation and the utility of belonging to a pronunciation club to improve your skills. It's a really uniquely valuable experience. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks, and so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. I'm so excited to see you. How have you been?
Hello. It's been a while. I know.
You were away. I think you were in Switzerland, right? And then you came back and you got sick. So I haven't seen you in. I mean, I've saw you a couple times in the last couple weeks in our feedback club and in our office hours, but I haven't seen you as much as I used to recently. But you've been super busy and you're starting a master's program. That's exciting. So you're going to be really busy coming up then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see a little bit less of you. I'm so happy to see you. How have you been?
Yeah. Practicing English anyways, regardless if I'm busy or not. Because remember that I use English for my work, thing I do. So even if I haven't been showing up on your sessions and office hours, I still got some learning process.
Some opportunities, we can say. This is interesting, you mentioned it. So for you, you're at work. Your work is in English. It's an international setting, right? A lot of people speak English, but from different places. Or do you feel like you're mentally at a place where as you're speaking, you can monitor yourself? Or do you still feel like, oops, mistake slipped out? Man, go back, fix it, ignore it for now, just take note. Are you in a place of kind of noticing mistakes? Are you in a place of kind of preventing mistakes? Like, where are you mentally while you're working? Because it's already a pretty big cognitive load to be working.
Yeah, I will say the first option, because now I cannot even recall that what you said, the second option was too loud.
So you're able to monitor as you speak.
At some degree, so perhaps I do the mistake, I notice it, I register it mentally, I move on because it's not the context. Yeah, and then I will look this up or I take note. One, especially when it's, I do this more than once in the same day. And also when someone else does, that's the mistake and I notice it. Hey, perhaps before I was not able to perceive this inaccuracy. Just like that. So I do nothing because it's not the context, it's not language learning. Mm. But this, mental note that was a mistake. And sometimes it's, that's actually something I do sometimes. So even if it was not me, it will still help me anyways, because it will be something that I improved.
Yeah, I'm asking because a lot of people have a hard time, of course, me too, like in Spanish, I'm busy having the conversation, I'm busy doing my work. So it takes a lot of extra mental energy to monitor what I'm saying qualitatively, let's say, as I'm trying to carry on the conversation, as I'm trying to do my job. So I was just wondering if that is something that you're able to do now. And it sounds like you're in a really good place that you've got a bird in the sky view where you can see what you're saying as you're saying it. And you can also see what other people are saying in an objective way as well. Is that true?
Yeah. So I think that is worth mentioning that we have taken this for granted is that I work remotely. So the conversations and meetings are through the computer, not the person. And this is a lot easier because I'm in the computer already, so I can take notes in a split second. I have to imagine now, but if I will guess, it will be a lot harder to do this in person.
Yeah, good point. Hold on, team leader. Let me pull out my notebook and pen. And what did you just say? Say it the wrong way. Let me that would be awkward and time consuming. Yeah, totally. Whereas you can discreetly, since you're working online, you can just discreetly have the little notes app open and just take a little note of the thing that you said. Very cool. Good point. Yeah, very good point. Not something I would have thought to share because often, maybe it was true before, but not so much now, people would often be more nervous with these virtual meetings and having meetings where they had to worry about the camera and what can people hear? Do they notice I'm not paying attention? Those kinds of things. But now I think a lot of people are used to that in a way. So maybe that's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, I think the COVID lockdown was a tipping point. After a while, people get used. Even if they were not willing to, it was what it was. So a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
So now it's more normalized. Things online.
It's like the new norm now. Yeah, I don't think it's an issue at all. But I remember how much effort that took a lot of people. I had already been working online, maybe you too. So I was used to Like, I knew what Zoom was. A lot of people didn't even know what Zoom was. Or I remember when I did my master's online, we didn't use Zoom. It wasn't even Zoom back then. It was this thing called Big Blue Button was like the platform had used.
You mean Skype?
It was more like Zoom. It was for meetings and it was used for education. Yeah, it was called Big Blue Button.
The actual name.
It was the name of it. Yeah, the name of the software, right? I did my master's online. This was before it was popular. Now it's, everybody does their schooling stuff online. But I remember it was such a big deal. And then when COVID hit, everybody was like, what's this button? How do I turn on the camera? Can you hear me? That was a whole thing. So now you're able to do everything, plus take notes, plus monitor your speech. And I feel like that's a lot of automation already running in your brain. So I haven't seen you in a while and you're reflecting on these. What do you think are your challenges right now?
Challenges. I would say consistency, because sometimes, let's say I'm one step ahead as compared to the past. So now I know, this is a mistake. Be voice. Before I was unaware of it. Let's say I think it was users or something recently that was RS at the end when you make the portal. I don't voice it.
Yeah.
So what happens that cognitively I'm aware this should be voiced, but I haven't catch up the automaticity. Yeah, no pun intended. You have a mistake that I do usually. So what happens that I know it should be like this, but it doesn't come out like this. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's very likely I will voice less often.
Yeah, sure.
It just happened to be that I'm not even aware that I do this mistake. That's also true. But at least, even if I catch something here and there, it's good enough because this is an iterative. Iterative.
Oh, so close. Iterative.
Iterative process. Even if you get one, perhaps I did, I don't know, 50 inaccuracies or mistakes during the meeting. I only catch one or two. At least it's something, because since I will start the learning process, it's unlikely we'll repeat that. Perhaps I will slip like I just did twice now, but I'm aware of the actual pronunciation. It doesn't happen not yet. It's immature still.
Yeah.
It's too young. So even if it's not the point of the meeting, it's because it's work. I still get some input for the language and I am improving on that. And since I'm having meetings almost every day, so there are plenty of iteration.
Yes, and you just mentioned one thing, which is that you already know what the focus is. Even if you can't put all of your attention on that or enough attention on that to catch it before it slips through the door. Oh, there's our balloons. Yeah, for people who are just listening to this on the podcast, there's this AI now on my recording software, which I can't quite figure it out, how I'm triggering balloons to happen, how I'm triggering thumbs up to happen. Even when I do thumbs up on purpose, I don't seem to get the AI picture of the thumbs, but just now we got balloons. So yay, we were saying that now you're in this space, as you said, it's iterative, meaning you're doing, how would we describe the word iterative for people who are not in that field that uses that word?
Oh yeah, okay. Perhaps it's kind of a technical word.
Yeah.
It's like going by steps. It's not something you can do overnight. So you need, for instance, first you become aware. Oh, yeah. I was doing a mistake. Then, I realized that's the correct way. Perhaps I can hear it from a native speaker from you, let's say. Mm-hmm. But, I cannot reproduce that sound today. That will require practice. So that's the first step.
Yeah.
Then another day, I will practice to actually say that loud in a context, let's say. So my brain will get some practice from rehearsal. After a while, another day, so you're fine-tuning, levels, so from the most basic to the most advanced. And the most advanced will be when you can use it spontaneously without actually thinking about it. With this there, wait for the word. It's not automaticity.
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 Yes.
Automaticity.
Automaticity. Automaticity.
In this case, what I'm having is an influence of native language. So you have an interference that is preventing me to say in the English. Intonation, more about intonation.
Especially, yeah. And it used to be more syllable stress, how the influence of your first language or one of your first languages, Catalan, the way that they do syllable stress, we realized was slightly different than in English. So it was like two out of three things were there and one little thing was a bit off. So as we said, iterations, for people who don't normally use that word, is, to me, I think of it as drafts or steps or part of the process that need to be reviewed as you're recycling your practice. So as you said, maybe step one, awareness. Say, I didn't even know that was a problem. I didn't even know that existed. Then maybe it could be awareness is there. Maybe you need to do some drilling for some very discreet, here's what I need to do with my muscles and my mouth and my lips. And there's a procedure you have to learn. Then there's some practice, there's muscle memory, all of that before automaticity. And as you said before, sometimes you're aware, you're making the mistake as you make it, as it's slipping out your mouth, but there's really nothing you can do at that point. But that's something.
It's still progress because you are aware you're making the mistake. Before, you were not even aware of it.
Yeah. You didn't even exist it.
I was not voicing any V's in their language. So never. And I was unaware of that.
Yeah. Tell me about that in English. Anyways, V as in victory and B as in baby. You have a merger there, right? Where V's and B's are essentially the same, more or less, for some languages, for some regions, for some dialects in Spanish. And so there's already that exists. But tell me if this is true or not. In Spanish, your brain knows that there should be a difference. It's just that your mouth and the culture doesn't care. Is that right? You see them as different sounds, but you say, meh, nobody cares.
I think perhaps that was true in the past.
Okay.
That was a dynamic process across centuries. So that involved different generations of cities. Mm-hmm. And now there's a point that we think it's the same sound. There are different letters that have the exact same sound. There's no difference. Okay. I just don't care to make the difference. It's that it shouldn't have any difference.
Okay. So that's not the case at all. I was thinking there was a progression there too. Like there was a mental decision to say, no big deal, doesn't matter. But that's not the case. The case is, for you guys, they are the same sound. And so they shouldn't be different in a way. That's a bigger hurdle, I think,
Perhaps some dialects that won't be true, or some elderly who are speaking old-fashioned dialects, also kind of distinct a little, but this is getting so lost that now we could simplify that. I will even stretch it that it will be the opposite. It will be a mistake. That you're actually voicing it when it shouldn't be.
And it's a mistake now because so many people don't do it. It's considered a mistake. It's like a majority thing.
By the way, now it's happening this to me because now I'm voicing the V's in English. So what happens that when the English word comes from Latin, it's a cognate, it's very similar with Spanish or Catalan. Sometimes I voice it. That doesn't happen with my name because it's fossilized because I have said my last name trillions of times. But so it's a word that is uncommon. I could spend months without saying that word. Sometimes it triggers the English and I say the voice.
You say the V as in victory, even though it's a Spanish word and it took me a
bit. And then I noticed that right away. And then I repeated I voice it.
That's hilarious. Now your English is actually influencing back on the Spanish, this thing that was there centuries ago.
Something related. I was ill. I was at the doctor's office.
Yeah, the doctor's office.
Wow, physician. So I was feeling terrible. I had a fever, a massive headache. So I was having difficulty with cognitive tasks, like speaking. So we were speaking in Spanish, but for me at that moment, I'm having a hard time speaking, collecting my thoughts. So I just opened the door, start talking about the symptoms. I have this, I have that in Spanish. And the physician was also Spanish. And he asked me, where are you from? And I said, perhaps he wants to do a small talk. If I have a weak pattern in my speaking, that'd be kind of English. I know, okay, let's go by the small talk. But I said, I'm from here. I don't know what you are expecting. I'm a local. I have been living all my life here. And he said, I asked because I'm noticing a slight Yankee accent, cultural load. Yankee here means American, from the US.
Makes sense.
So perhaps since I was so fatigued and so ill and I had a hard time, my brain was in autopilot. It's the first thing that comes to mind. This goes out with no processing, no filtering.
Yeah.
So I don't remember how I spoke at that moment because I don't have much memory because I was really very
basically low. Delirious, yeah.
Interesting thought that one native speaker thinks I'm not local because of my slight accent that reminds him of American accent.
How funny. And it was just slipping through the veil of your delirium, basically. And this person noticed that you had no conscious control over this.
Yeah. I says, I don't have a recording. I have to wait next time I'm ill for recording. Right. Perhaps I was overvoicing or doing all of those patterns Americans do when they speak in Spanish.
Yeah. And not so just Spanish, regional too. When he said, are you from here? Do you think he meant, are you from Spain, the country, or are you from this area, this city?
Awesome. Good question. I don't know, but based on the context, I previously thought from this city. Because there's only one. Now, there were more buildings available that you can go 24/7. Now, there's only one available. So perhaps he asked because now some other small cities come here. I don't know. That's what I assume. Based on his comment is, he was talking if I was from another country.
Yeah. I guess that would be like, how many in your state of almost non-consciousness, how many mistakes were you making and what were the type of those mistakes that might make him think, Spanish, definitely Spanish, but not from this area versus, maybe not Spanish at all.
Yeah, that you have a light accent that is foreign. It's not from any speaking
cat, any specific Spanish place. Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't close enough for him to do that. Yeah, I wonder what he was thinking in his mind, if it was more regional or more national there. So the type of that, the type of mistake.
On top of that, it's a person who's in daily routine, sees a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. And doctors often interact with people from different areas, like you said, with expats or immigrants who are living there. So sometimes they have a pretty good ear.
Yeah, and since it's an emergency, 24/7, so they get a lot of different people, different backgrounds, because you need assistance, you go there, regardless of your background, your income, or whatever it is. It's democratic, anyone can go there.
It's so like a clinic, right? It's like a 24-hour free clinic.
No, not free, it's paid by taxes. You could see immigrants of the many different languages. I can guarantee that physician had a lot of input, a rich input of different backgrounds, different languages.
Yeah.
Natives, bilinguals, non-natives. So for him to ask me where I am from is okay. That is meaningful.
Yeah, he has a reason to ask, right? Yeah, absolutely. He's picking up on something that somebody in the street might not pick up on, right? Which you might not even do if you weren't sick. So I think that the main lesson here is whenever you're sick, record yourself. No, I'm just kidding.
I will, I will.
Always. Achoo, achoo, press record.
And what happened that I asked my mother to drive me to there? So what happened that with my mother, I speak my native language, Catalan, all my life. And since I was feeling so bad, I was cursing. So what happened that I was cursing in English? And I realized that because my mother doesn't speak English. So based on her face, her reaction is, oh, shoot, I'm...
Something's happening.
Yeah. So when it's automated, you usually when you curse and you say the F word or similar, you don't think about it. You feel pain and you want to distress the pain.
Yeah.
It's, oh, now I can see that I have internalized the language so much. And my native language, I don't speak it. It's been many years that I don't speak it daily in my daily life. Now my brain is like switching that English is becoming the default.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's why I can do more spontaneous speaking without losing accuracy. Mm-hmm. In the sense, yeah, I do mistakes, I know. But if it was not spontaneous, I will still do those mistakes anyways. So it's not the cause, it's not because I'm not thinking what to say. I'm not rehabbed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that automaticity is really there, right? On a level that you're not even conscious of. Literally, you're not conscious of it. Because when we swear too, sometimes it's very conscious and deliberate. But often it comes from this like very primal area of the brain where, because we have so many feelings associated with swear words or words that are taboo, our brain kind of codes them in this way that has a lot of emotional attachment there, and they feel like pure emotion, basically, that come out. You stub your toe, bad words come out, right? Or seemingly bad words. So it's so interesting.
I will tell you even more. So what I realized that is, oh, wait a second, I am actually soaring in English. So let me try once in Catalan, language. And yeah, it doesn't do the job. It's not a spell. It's like psychologically, it's not relieving me that I'm not satisfied. I need words in English so I can dissipate the bad energy, more or less.
Totally.
That in English now, it feels bad to say it out loud. I don't know how to express it.
Those curse words, they have more power, depending on, again, how we feel about them, how we associate with them, right? We might have a stronger draw to curse words in a certain language, right? Because they feel like they have more power in that. And I think that's super fascinating, that intersection of like swear words, let's say, and language and the psychology of the language. To me, that's super, super interesting. For example, I forget who it was. I think it was an Arabic speaker that in Arabic, they would never swear. Right. They would never use blasphemy. They would never say words that were considered, you know, they were on the naughty list, let's say. But in English, oh, no, everything goes. Right. And this was interesting to me. I said, why do you swear in English when you have this very profound desire to not swear in your first language? And this person said that, like, God didn't listen when it was in English. Like, it didn't matter. It didn't count, basically. And I thought that was the funniest answer I had ever heard. Of course, it was a joke, right? They were just kidding. But I thought, oh, how interesting. What an interesting thought, anyways, to say that if the reason you're doing this is because someone else is listening, whether it's a higher power or your mom or whoever, but then the fact that they don't understand what you're saying, that also maybe gives it some power too. So you said in this case, your mother, she was confused. Was she thinking you were speaking gibberish in Catalan, or was she thinking, oh, he must be really sick because I recognize that that's an English swear word?
I don't know. I didn't ask. I was feeling terrible. It was also painful to talk.
Oh, no.
Because of the throat. Yeah. That's also something to take into account. She knows that I speak mainly English now.
Yeah.
And it's also obvious because when I keep a conversation, I have trouble here and there of one word that, oh man, I forgot the word. I cannot recall it now. I just drop it in Spanish because I don't want to interrupt the conversation.
Yeah.
So by context, she was aware that, okay, I'm guessing that is English because I'm not understanding. It's not Spanish or Catalan, therefore it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she figured that out. Plus, yeah, I wonder too if she knew, like, not only is it English, my son's a bit delirious right now, but also it's English swear words too. Like, what's going on with that?
I don't think so. Even if the F word is easy to recognize.
Yeah.
Not for her.
No, okay. So, or at least mom didn't hear. Oh, that's very interesting. I think so telling how when you're talking about what recently how you got very sick and how that interacted with your language, that's really interesting to me. For example, I have a similar story. When I was a teenager, I was an exchange student in France. I don't know if I told you this. So I was living in France with a host family. And I do remember one day, I don't know if this is the case in Spain, but the way that the architecture is, often you have the house and then you have a lawn or a yard and then you have a wall in front of the street. So there's an exterior gate.
I like the balcony, you mean.
Almost like your house, you're walking along the street and you've got the sidewalk and then you've got a wall. And I know this is the case in many countries. And so you don't actually see the person's house. You don't see their lawn because there's a wall there. So if it's your house, when you come home, you have to go through the door in the wall outside the exterior. Okay, that's common there too. Okay, so you get what I'm saying. A lot of people, I think in the US, this is a kind of a foreign concept of having like a wall between your lawn and the street, right? Because for us, when we walk down the street, you just see the houses, right? There's no barrier there. So here's my point. I was sick one night. I think I went to bed early, completely delirious. I hear the bell ring for that exterior gate. It was the brother of the host family that I was living with. And he had forgotten his keys, so he couldn't get in, but he was still on the street. So I hear this bell, and it must have woken me up out of this like fever dream or something. And I remember that I was fluent in French at the time, but I was so delirious. I must have thought that I was in the US. And I didn't know what was happening, but I know that I was talking to everybody in English, even though they were responding to me in French. They told me about this later. And I was so out of it that I didn't even know where I was, basically. So for me, that kind of reminded me of your story of the brain doing its best in this challenging situation. What do I do with words? And I've got words in different languages. And what's the easiest path for the brain to take when I'm sick?
It takes the shortcuts.
Yeah.
The easiest solution.
It does what it's used to. It's really interesting to see, has the brain automatized by then? That's when you really see it. You see it when you're fatigued. You see it when you're sick. You see it when you go to, let's say, take some test or something, because that's when all of your habits really come out. It's when you've got those other stressors. So I think that's a really interesting story for you to share about all these things that happen to you while you're sick, especially since I haven't seen you in a while. So I hadn't known like what you've been up to, let's say linguistically in that time. It's really cool to hear how you're noticing the challenges. You're noticing the steps that your brain goes through when it's working together with your mouth. You're speaking English every day at work, which is an opportunity that a lot of people don't have, but you're able to then move from, let's say, inside your head to get this bird's eye view of what's going on with you and with other people at the same time. Also, you're able to take notes. Let's say you're in a meeting, you're able to divide your attention and take some notes as well. All that is fantastic. Are there any other challenges do you feel like you're facing now? Or do you feel like it's just a matter of, let's say, maintenance and just more work? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I will say the current challenge I'm facing now that I didn't before is the restriction of time. Time restrictions. Because before I could spend 20 minutes, half an hour, or 1 hour and something if I wanted to through a rabbit hole. Now I cannot do that. So even if, yes, I know it will be good to practice this, or I don't know, to record the podcast episode. Yeah, it will need to wait a little because I recorded the that's something we can do. I can record an episode at 3 a.m., delirious and sleepy. And let's see which pattern I speak with.
Great idea. Yes, yeah. I'll just surprise, like a fire alarm, for like a drill. Yeah. Yes, surprise English time. Let's record. Yeah, see what happens.
Independently of the action, it's about something that, for me, I remember this very vividly. Lost, the TV show called Lost. Okay. In the last season, there was one Japanese character that he knew how to speak English.
Yeah.
But he preferred to speak in Japanese and have a translator on his side. And he said, they asked, why do you keep speaking Japanese if you speak English? He said, oh, I like how Japanese tastes in my mouth, how it feels in my mouth.
Oh. Well,
That clicked. I don't know why that was my memory. And now I do the same for English. Sometimes I can. So I know the other person is a Spanish speaker. I keep English because if I can choose, I want English because it feels more comfortable.
That's super interesting.
Perhaps, I don't know, it's because now I have the muscle memory or I articulate differently now that when I go back to my native articulation, let's say, old articulation, it's not choppy. It's not choppy, but I'm wearing a hat and I cannot wear a hat 24/7. So I want to remove it. So now it feels comfortable that I will not change the language unless I need to.
That's super insightful. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. Sometimes I like to compare accents to like putting on a jacket when you take it off, right? Especially if you're a person who might work internationally with international people, or if you, especially if you're an actor, right? You need to take these accents on and put them off. Maybe you're code switching with family members or other people, friends. So we change those things all the time. That's totally normal. But the way you just described it, I really like because it says something to me. So normally when we say, hey, what's an accent? We normally say there's four parts to an accent. There's the pronunciation. Did I say lost or last, for example? There's the prosody, which you mentioned earlier. I think something about intonation. There's the connected speech, right? All the music of the language, the syllable stress, stuff like that. Here's what you're talking about now. Posture. Oral posture. And often when I'm working on just acquiring the accent or learning the accent, I have to think, okay, how open is my jaw? Is my tongue in the front? Is it in the back? How far, right? How do I make that dark L, for example? I have to really think about my articulation, as you said. But now you're saying that there's a comfort to your posture, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it's almost like when people, let's say, if you imagine in your mind a guy who's a swimmer and he's been a swimmer his whole life and he's got the physique of a swimmer, he or she, and then she says, you know what? I want to be a rugby player. And she walks out on the field first day and she does not look like all the other rugby players because her muscles are just used to that other thing, that swimming thing. And I feel like now your muscles have gone from swimmer's muscles in your mouth to like kind of like a rugby muscle. And now it's becoming so much for you that the fact that now when you go swimming, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm sinking here. I feel like I feel weird in the water, right? The way you described that with the hat, that's what it made me think
of. It's a good analogy. Perhaps it's more cognitively based because the swimmer and the rugby player is more of a physiology. It's more or less the same principle.
And when you mentioned hat, I immediately thought, oh, is the hat too big? Is the hat too small? Is it not the right style for you? I think that's also a really good analogy.
Yeah, the hat, for instance, the mask, when we had to wear the mask because of COVID, that after a while, it becomes cumbersome to wear the mask. Some point or other, you will want to remove it. And if I could choose, I would choose not to use it because it's more comfortable. Say for English now is more comfortable. I don't get tired. I remember 3 years ago in 2020, when I started recording videos in English, that when I recorded, I don't know, 1 hour and so, I was doing raw recordings, writing a software and so on. It was not just shooting the video. It was also doing my own stuff and verbalizing what I do, like a streamer kind of thing with video games, trying to learn one software. So what happened? That I had to time my sessions, not based on my cognitive level, there was being fatigued or something. No, it's because I was tired of speaking.
Physically tired.
Yeah, and not because I'm not used to speak, which I do. I was a teacher and so on. It was because of speaking English, articulating in English.
Physically tired, like we were saying, swimming, rugby playing, like you actually using those muscles, it makes you more tired, right?
At the end. Exactly.
I feel like that often happens and people forget this is a lot of work. Language itself is a ton of work, cognitive work. But when you really think about how you're articulating words and what your muscles are doing and your jaw and then paying attention to the voicing, for example, it's a lot of extra mental work, but also it's a lot of physical work too. Mm-hmm. I think people forget that and it can be very tiring as well. So if you're sick, for example, earlier you were talking about how you were sick. Imagine all the extra effort that you probably were doing. But in fact, at that point, it was less effort because you've been so normalized.
Yeah, there will be a golden nugget that my brain went to the less effort articulation mode, let's say. And today, my least effort articulation, it's more inclined to the American English. That's why perhaps I was using more patterns of American English when I was speaking Spanish. Well, the nugget you mentioned is that we hyper-focused on the cognitive level aspect of pronunciation, but there's also, especially at the beginning, the physical aspect that even myself, I didn't pay that much attention, to be honest.
Right, yeah, yeah.
looking back is, oh, you know what? That was actually the difference that it made. And it's like, in order to be performant in swimming, to compete and so on, you have to train. Same for a second language speaker. Better at English, you need to, quote unquote, train in the English articulation, get the physical adaptations, not just the cognitive additions, and it's a matter of time. So today, it's just not if you will be able or not, you will be able to do it or not, it's when.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yes, I think a lot of people like physical exercise, right? They think, oh, I've got to do a ton of physical exercise. I'm starting tomorrow. Let's say it's New Year's, right? Everyone's like, resolution, I'm going to start a 5K marathon. But no, it's like, start with stretching, right? Start with not even jumping jacks, but like little leg lifts, things like that. It's not how long, it's not how much, it's how often. So I think there's a frequency there that gets our muscles where they need to be for whatever that target is. Muscles, I think to recap, muscles, emotional energy. One thing you touched on was the fact that it's a feeling as well. How do I feel? Do I feel comfortable in this, in language one, language two? How comfortable do I feel in certain situations? All of that stuff together, I think, is amazing, because when we say accent, a lot of people think, oh, I just have to learn how to say ah instead of ah. But it's a big thing. It's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. And I love talking to you too, because we have so much fun together, especially when we have like our office hours or our feedback club. So we've really missed you not being there lately with your busy work schedule and your sickness. But I want to remind you and tell everybody out there that when we have feedback club, we meet 3 times a week and we have office hours once a week. So that's an opportunity to see each other 4 times a week, every week at very reasonable prices. And you've been one of our longest standing members. And I know how much it means to you. So I know that you want to be there. And when you're sick or when you're super busy, I know that you don't miss sessions because you want to, but because you really have to.
It's, oh, damn, I miss a session. I feel that.
Something's missing. Yeah, something's missing there. Yeah, and I feel like, I don't want to say it's great that you were sick, but I do want to say it was amazing the insights you got from that to see maybe how far you've come, because you wouldn't have maybe thought about that otherwise until you were reflecting on the fact that, oh my God, when I was sick, these are the things that still happened and still came out totally automatically, totally unaware. I was not choosing these things. So thanks so much for sharing that experience with us today and catching us up to where you are now after such a long process so far.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, as always. If you want to meet William in person, live in person, join our feedback club. Join at least what we call the Accent Enthusiast Club, which means you can come to office hours. And if you come to feedback club, you get to see us live all week long. We're super fun. And hopefully we'll see you there. All right, guys. Catch you soon.
See you.
Bye for now. If you found this episode helpful in any way, please subscribe and leave a review. It's actually really helpful to me. Now, before I go, I have 2 tasks for you to do. First, I want you to register and come to my free monthly masterclass. They're on the last Thursday of the month. In just 1 hour, you're going to master a specific American accent skill. For example, the TH sound or rhythm. The Zoom registration link actually changes each month. So the second and maybe more important thing I want to ask you to do is to sign up for my mailing list, because you're going to get the registration link each month and you're going to get bonus materials before and after the masterclass that I only send to my email list subscribers. The email opt-in link is down in the show notes. Be sure to sign up for my mailing list and come to the monthly masterclass for free. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I want you to know that your voice is your choice. Thanks for sticking around to the end of the show. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye for now.